Looks like the Illuminati oil spill card has been played. There is an Illuminati card game from the 90s, for those who aren't aware of it, that has all these cards, and the events on these cards just seem to keep happening one after another. That's kind of weird. I'm going to read an article about the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, called "Evidence Indicates Gulf of Mexico Oil Disaster Was Engineered and Prolonged by Design." RogueGovernment.com, Lee Rogers, July 10th, 2010. The BP oil disaster in the Gulf of Mexico is obviously a situation of unprecedented proportions. Even worse is that there is a great deal of evidence to indicate that this event was an engineered conspiracy. Even if one is not convinced of a conspiracy, it is at the very least obvious that the U.S. government and the corporate media are not giving the general public a full picture of what's going on. First, a number of powerful players conveniently had the foresight to dump large numbers of BP shares prior to the event, which began on April 20th, 2010. This saved them from the substantial loss in value of BP shares that occurred after the event. Goldman Sachs sold 44% of its shares in BP just prior to when this disaster began. BP's CEO Tony Hayward sold a large chunk of his BP shares a few weeks before the spill. Both Wachovia and UBS also sold a large block of their BP shares before the spill. Second, Halliburton, which has been responsible for servicing the oil rig involved in this disaster, purchased Boots and Coots, a company specializing in extinguishing oil well and oil rig fires, just days prior to the incident. Halliburton was also involved in conducting a cementing operation on the oil rig just 20 hours before it went up in flames. BP would eventually hire Boots and Coots to work with them on containing the oil spill. Third, Peter Sutherland, a member of powerful globalist organizations such as the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderberg Group, has held high-level positions at both Goldman Sachs and BP. It is highly probable that he played a role in Goldman Sachs' decision to dump a large chunk of their BP shares prior to the disaster, considering he has maintained an affiliation with both institutions. Conveniently, the Trilateral Commission's website removed his bio page from their website, but it is still available via the Wayback Machine here. There it details his role at both BP and Goldman Sachs. Fourth, this disaster is now conveniently providing the U.S. government and the various powers that be the excuse to revamp energy policy. In particular, it provides the pretext to push ahead draconian cap-and-trade and carbon tax initiatives. Fifth, on the day of the explosion, the Coast Guard initially reported that there was an explosion on the oil rig 3 hours before it went up in flames. They later retracted the statement, claiming that this was due to a computer timestamp problem and that such an explosion never took place. This is a fairly ridiculous notion, considering that accountability of time is taken incredibly seriously in every branch of the U.S. military. It is unlikely that such a mistake was made, and more likely that this was merely an attempt to retract truthful information that didn't fit in with how they intended on framing the official story. Sixth, all attempts to plug the oil gusher have failed thus far. This is as of the article 7-10-10. Sixth, all attempts to plug the oil gusher have failed thus far. This in and of itself isn't strange, but what is strange is the tactics used to plug the leak have basically been the same ones that failed to stop a much smaller oil leak that occurred in the Gulf of Mexico in 1979. Why would so-called industry experts use the same tactics that failed 31 years ago on a much larger oil gusher? It doesn't make any sense unless the intention was to prolong the disaster. Surprisingly, MSNBC's Rachel Maddow actually did a halfway decent job covering this aspect of the containment failures in one of her TV segments, which can be viewed below. Okay. There's a video. From a more esoteric perspective, the 2009 film Knowing, starring Nicolas Cage, shows a TV news report of an oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico that looks very similar to the real-life event that occurred a few months ago. In the 1970s, BP released a board game called Offshore Oil Strike, which contained artwork and themes quite reminiscent of what we see unfolding with the current oil rig disaster today. Many important historical events involving a significant amount of deaths have occurred on either April 19th or April 20th, and more generally, from April 19th till May 1st. This has led many to believe that the priest class elite see this as an important period of time to stage events which are in actuality blood sacrifice rituals. Officially, the oil rig explosion of April 20th, 2010 resulted in the deaths of 11 people. Other recent events that have occurred on either April 19th or April 20th include the Oklahoma City bombing in 1995, the slaughter of the Branch Davidians in Waco in 1993, and the Columbine school shooting incident in 1999. On April 19th, 1775, the first battles of the Revolutionary War at Lexington and Concord took place. In recognition of these battles, this day is now observed in Massachusetts as Patriots Day and is officially observed on the third Monday of the month of April. Even more interesting is that the Virginia Tech Massacre, which resulted in the death of 33 people, including the shooter, by way of suicide, took place on April 16th, 2007, which also happens to coincide with the date Massachusetts observed Patriots Day that year. April 20th is even Adolf Hitler's birthday. April 20th is also the 110th day of the year and the 111th day on leap years, which is a very interesting numerological connotation. The bottom line is that the chances are very high that the BP oil disaster was an engineered event designed to push ahead cap and trade and other new sweeping regulatory reforms. It allows companies like Halliburton and others to profit off of what will be a very expensive cleanup. All the players that dumped BP stock before the disaster now have the opportunity to buy back into the stock at far cheaper prices. We could even see higher oil and gasoline prices, especially if the moratorium on oil drilling in the Gulf of Mexico implemented by the Obama administration remains in place. Overall, if one looks at who gains from these events, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out who might have engineered them. The same can be said about this ongoing disaster in the Gulf of Mexico. All right, that was a good article. So this date, April 20th, pretty crazy. All these things that happen on April 19th and April 20th over the years. And I've heard rumors that this is a time of ritual sacrifice. So April 19th, you have the thing in Waco in 93. You have the Oklahoma City bombing in 95. I noticed that on April 19th, 1971, Charles Manson was sentenced to death for the Sharon Tate murders. It's kind of interesting. And then on April 19th, 1985, was the FBI siege on the compound of the Covenant, the Sword, and the Arm of the Lord in Arkansas. And April 19th, 2005, Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger is elected Pope Benedict XVI. That's kind of weird. So, now it's August 9th, and this oil leak thing, this oil disaster is supposedly pretty much resolved. Man, oh man. Think of how many animals died. That's terrible. Serious destruction to the coast of the southern United States. If people are orchestrating these things on purpose, think of how sick they must be. Something else that happened recently in July is that the Queen of England on July 6th went to the site of the World Trade Center to Ground Zero, and then she spoke before the UN that same day. And Queen of England, I think, is freaking weird. And people talk about how she's a reptilian hybrid, or possessed by reptile demons. You know what? She probably is. So here's the news clip. I mean, it's so bizarre. This old woman, the queen, ruling over all these countries from basically behind the scenes, because people, the common conception, perception is that she doesn't have any power, but apparently she owns more land on this planet than anybody else. Okay, let me play this news clip of the Lizard Queen coming to the 9/11 mega ritual site.
Queen Elizabeth II braved stifling heat in a brief appearance at the World Trade Center, where she placed a wreath of flowers to remember the victims of 9/11. After shaking hands with victims' families and first responders, the Queen visited the nearby British Garden of Remembrance, which was built to honor the 67 Britons killed in the 2001 terrorist attacks. New York's mayor welcomed her to the city.
Your Majesty, we are grateful for your friendship, leadership, and support, and we are also honored that you are here to officially open this garden to the public.
Earlier, the Queen spoke at the United Nations, where she praised the UN's aims and values and challenged the body's membership to promote prosperity and dignity for the world's inhabitants.
You have helped to reduce conflict. You have offered humanitarian assistance to millions of people affected by natural disasters and other emergencies. And you have been deeply committed to tackling the effects of poverty in many parts of the world.
The Queen also recalled the dramatic changes in the world since she last spoke at the UN, especially in science, technology, and social attitudes. The 84-year-old monarch last delivered remarks to the world body in 1957, 4 years after her coronation. Ross Simpson, The Associated Press.
All right, I think I'm just going to play her whole speech. It's like 8 to 9 minutes. Here we go.
I have the honor to invite Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II to address the General Assembly.
Mr. President, Secretary General, members of the General Assembly. I believe I was last here in 1957. Since then, I have traveled widely and met many leaders, ambassadors, and statesmen from around the world. I address you today as Queen of 16 United Nations member states and as head of the Commonwealth of 54 countries. I have also witnessed great change, much of it for the better, particularly in science and technology and in social attitudes. Remarkably, many of these sweeping advances have come about not because of governments, committee resolutions, or central directives, although all these have played a part, but instead because millions of people around the world have wanted them. For the United Nations, these subtle yet significant changes in people's approach to leadership and power have foreshadowed failure and demise. Instead, the United Nations has grown and prospered by responding and adapting to those shifts. But also, many important things have not changed. The aims and values which inspire the United Nations Charter endure to promote international peace, security, and justice.
All right, hang on. Let me do something here.
To relieve and remove the blight of hunger.
Hang on, Queen. We gotta get this synced up here.
Demise.
Okay, y'all enjoying the
instead,
speech
the
by the Queen?
Nation has
here we
grown
go. Hold on.
Prospered
Queen?
By responding and
Queen Elizabeth. Okay, here we go. Queen Elizabeth, here we go.
To those shifts. But also, many important...
Hang on, let me back it up. I think I missed a few seconds. Here we go.
Significant changes
Let's
in
go,
people's
Queen.
Approach to leadership and power might have foreshadowed failure and demise. Instead, the United Nations has grown and prospered by responding and adapting to those shifts. But also, many important things have not changed. The aims and values which inspire the United Nations Charter endure to promote international peace, security, and justice, to relieve and remove the blight of hunger, poverty, and disease, and to protect the rights and liberties of every citizen.
What a joke.
The achievements of the United Nations are remarkable. When I was first here, there were just 3 United Nations operations overseas. Now, over 120,000 men and women are deployed in 26 missions across the world. You have helped to reduce conflict. You have offered humanitarian assistance to millions of people affected by natural disasters and other emergencies. And you have been deeply committed to tackling the effects of poverty in many parts of the world. But so much remains to be done. Former Secretary General Doug Hammarskjöld once said that constant attention by a good nurse may be just as important as a major operation by a surgeon. Good nurses get better with practice. Sadly, the supply of patients never ceases. This September, leaders will meet to agree how to achieve the Millennium Development Goals, when each nation will have its own distinctive contribution to make. New challenges have also emerged, which have tested this organization as much as its member states. One such is the struggle against terrorism.
Terrorism.
Another challenge is climate change.
Climate change.
Where careful account must be taken of the risks faced by smaller, more vulnerable nations, many of them from the Commonwealth. Mr. President, I started by talking about leadership. I have much admiration for those who have the talent to lead, particularly in public service and in diplomatic life. And I congratulate you, your colleagues, and your predecessors on your many achievements. It has perhaps always been the case that the waging of peace is the hardest form of leadership of all. I know of no single formula for success, but over the years, I have observed that some attributes of leadership are universal and are often about finding ways of encouraging people to combine their efforts, their talents, their insights, their enthusiasm and their inspiration
and their currencies and their constitutions and their every nation into one.
Since I addressed you last, the Commonwealth too has grown vigorously to become a group of nations representing nearly 2 billion people. It gives its wholehearted support to the significant contributions to the peace and stability of the world made by the United Nations and its agencies. Last November, when I opened the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting in Trinidad and Tobago, I told the delegates that the Commonwealth had the opportunity to lead. Today, I offer you the same message. For over 6 decades, the United Nations has helped to...
Whoops, sorry about that. Here we go. Back to it.
...to lead. Heads of government meeting in Trinidad and Tobago. I told the delegates that the Commonwealth had the opportunity to lead. Today, I offer you the same message. For over 6 decades, the United Nations has helped to shape the international response to global dangers.
United Nations, you forgot the S.
The challenge now is to continue to show this care and convening leadership while not losing sight of your ongoing work to secure the security, prosperity, and dignity of our fellow human beings.
I thought you were an alien, ma'am.
When people in 53 years from now look back on us, they will doubtless view many of our practices as old-fashioned. But it is my hope that when judged by future generations, our sincerity, our willingness to take a lead, and our determination to do the right thing will stand the test of time. In my lifetime, the United Nations has moved from being a high-minded aspiration to being a real force for common good. That of itself has been a signal achievement. But we are not gathered here to reminisce. In tomorrow's world, we must all work together as hard as ever if we are truly to be United Nations.
Oh, bravo! Well said, old queen. Well said indeed. Queen of England.
On behalf of the General
and Prince Philip,
on behalf of the General Assembly, I wish to express our deep appreciation to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II for her inspired,
Ali
important,
Trekkie.
Inspiring
statement. Ali, what is his title? Ali Trekkie, United Nations General Assembly President.
For her inspired, important and inspiring statement. I request the representative to be kind enough to remain at their seats while we, the Secretary General and myself, accompany Her Majesty out of the General Assembly Hall, following which the plenary meeting will stand adjourned.
Something interesting, some recent news. Churchill and Eisenhower agreed to cover up Royal Air Force plane's UFO encounter during World War II, secret files reveal. There's a video. I haven't watched this yet. We're just going to see what happens.
The truth is,
anomaly television.
Quite literally out there. The Ministry of Defense has released its latest batch of files relating to UFOs. The sixth installment in a 3-year program has seen 18 files and 5,000 pages released. The documents relating to the years 1995 to 2003 even show that none other than Sir Winston Churchill was involved in a potential alien cover-up. Informed of a mysterious sighting in the east of England during World War II, the former Prime Minister hushed things up for fear of causing widespread panic. Former head of the MOD's UFO department, Nick Pope, explains more.
There's been some suggestion that Churchill tried to cover some of this up because he feared that it might undermine people's religious beliefs. I'm not sure about that, but he was certainly interested in the subject.
But is the weight of documentation enough for Pope to believe in little green men?
I'm convinced that there's life elsewhere in the universe. As to whether we're being visited or not, I don't know. I can't rule it out.
The files go on show at the National Archives for all of those interested in guaranteed sightings.
Now, Winston Churchill was a Freemason. Not that Freemasons are bad, but he was a Freemason. And they are into secrecy, by and large. Alright, what else is going on in this crazy world? Well, I've been focusing a lot on Planet X. I gotta tell you. And the more I see, the more I think this is a reality and this thing's coming back. And 2012 may be the year that there's going to be some weird, very weird stuff happening. Even weirder than anybody, than most people are even thinking who are into this topic. Something really weird. And kind of where I'm at is that I'm thinking that based on what I've read, the interviews and videos I've checked out, is that there is a planet, or it could be a moon, some kind of celestial body, that is orbiting on a short orbit, a brown dwarf star. And there could be a few planets, a few moons orbiting the star. This is basically a binary companion to our sun. A dwarf star is much different than our sun, though, because it's smaller. It's got less mass. It doesn't have enough mass for the necessary reaction to occur to maintain itself, emitting all this light that our nearby sun does. So a brown dwarf basically lights and then kind of fizzles out. So it kind of has a glow to it, like a, you know, like a campfire that's dying out. And I'm very interested in what Andy Lloyd's talking about, and of course Lucas, who I've made a number of his radio interviews now into video productions and put them up on YouTube and various video sites. Lucas has been interviewed by Lee Rogers a couple times, by Red Ice Radio, by John Moore, and most recently by the Intel Hub, which was on Friday, the 6th of August, 2010. So this thing could be a reality. This could be something hugely significant that's going to occur as this thing passes, as the planet of the crossing crosses once again. So I'm that's definitely on my radar. I'm very interested in that, as well as numerous other things. What was I going to say here? Oh, yeah. Last night, on 8-8-2010, Soundgarden played at Lollapalooza. Soundgarden has reunited. They played I'm gathering it's a sort of secret show back in April, April 16th. They played in Seattle at the Showbox. I think they were going under the name Nude Dragons, which is interesting. Because Lucas has pointed out that Soundgarden seems to know something about this Dark Sun, Black Sun, Planet X, Nibiru, which is referred to as the Dragon. The fiery dragon. I've seen it over and over. This thing is referred to as the dragon, so they're calling themselves the New Dragons on this secret show. But anyways, they played in Chicago last night at Lollapalooza, and I think I'm going to see if there's any photos or videos online. There might be. So they played last night, 8-8-2010. They took the stage at 8 p.m., supposedly. At least they were scheduled to. And when I was in college, Soundgarden was one of my favorite bands. I definitely remember a time when I considered them my favorite band. So when I was filming Lucas at Brave New Books talking about the Destroyer Star, and he brought up Soundgarden, I thought that was pretty cool. I was like, wow. Takes me back. So I started listening to Soundgarden a lot again. So anyways, what else is going on? Well, David Icke's talking about the Moon Matrix, which has to do with extraterrestrials on the moon, in the moon, the Earth's moon, manipulating planet Earth. I've checked out some stuff on that. Hey, could be the case. I mean, David Icke seems pretty honest to me, and I'm very interested in what he has to say, so I recommend checking out David Icke talking about the Moon Matrix. Bilderbergers, they met back in June, a couple months ago. Apparently they're running scared, that's what Alex Jones says. You know, I've been thinking, are there meetings, surely there are, of people higher level than the Bilderbergers that are meeting that, like, Alex Jones doesn't cover? I kind of have a feeling that he sort of knows some stuff that he doesn't cover. I don't know. I like Alex, but he can sure get on the defensive, and he doesn't like to talk about extraterrestrials, he doesn't like to talk about Wormwood, Planet X, and I just kind of wonder if there are groups, you know, these secretive groups, there's all these secretive groups, secret societies, secret fraternities. I mean, are there some, you know, just go to the highest level I can think of. Are there groups of humans that have meetings with aliens? Because if there were, if that was happening, I don't think Alex Jones would cover it. Or just even higher level meetings between like the Rothschilds and maybe the Queen of England and royalty. It's like, because like the Bilderberg group has a lot of heads of corporations, the media, some politicians, some royalty. But I have a feeling it goes higher, that there's higher, that these are kind of, I don't know, these are the mid-level dogs carrying a lot of stuff out, carrying their part of the agenda out, but there's a higher level. You know, in the Vatican, yeah, the Pope, all that shit. What the hell goes on in there? You know, are there meetings between the Pope and aliens? And, you know, all these other pedophiles in the Vatican? All these freaking weirdos? Because the Vatican is really spooky. And they're totally rich. I mean, I've walked through there. Good Lord. The Sistine Chapel. You know, hallways full of gold and expensive artwork. I mean, that place is loaded. They're totally wealthy. And it seems that all these people in positions of power in the Vatican are totally perverted psychopaths. And, you know, their thing is spirituality. It seems like they're kind of hijacking it. They're the gatekeepers. They're the people diverting people away from the true reality, the true goodness of all of spirituality and so forth. And the Vatican Library, I've heard about, that has all this ancient information, and they've closed it down now. I mean, what the hell's in there? And I just always think about the higher level. How high does this go? How deep does it go? Does it go to other dimensions? What does all that mean? Are we affecting other dimensions as we go about our third dimensional existence here, and the decisions we make and the things we do and the things we say and the videos we upload and our attitude and so forth. Does that affect other dimensions? And how does that work? What's that like? And are there stargates? Are there things like that? What's up with the pyramids? What's up with Kundalini energy? So, here's something about the moon matrix. Let me just read a little bit here. It's about David Icke's newest book, Human Race, Get Off Your Knees, The Lion Sleeps No More. David Icke marks his 20th year of uncovering astounding secrets and suppressed information with the publication of his most amazing book yet. He takes the manipulation of the human race and the nature of reality to still new levels of understanding. And he calls for humanity to rise up from its knees and take back the world from the sinister network of families and non-human entities that covertly control us from cradle to grave. David has moved the global cutting edge so many times since his incredible awakening in 1990, and here he does it again, and then some. His most staggering revelation is that the Earth and the collective human mind is manipulated from the moon, which he says is not a heavenly body but an artificial construct, a gigantic spacecraft, probably a hollowed-out planetoid, which is home to the extraterrestrial group that has been manipulating humanity for eons. He describes what he calls the Moon Matrix, a fake reality broadcast from the moon, which is decoded by the human body-mind in much the same way as portrayed in the Matrix movie trilogy. The Moon Matrix has hacked into the human body computer system, he says, and it is feeding us a manipulated sense of self,
and the world 24/7. We live in extraordinary times. On one side, we are seeing the imposition of a global Orwellian state of total surveillance and control by those who serve the moon matrix. And on the other, a fantastic energetic transformation is taking place, what David calls to the truth vibrations.
Save.